Welcome back to the Disciple Makers podcast. Today we are joined by Dan Miller to talk about listening. Dan started out his journey on this topic as a self-proclaimed terrible listener and was eager to share with us all that he has learned about the topic over the years. Often we can tend to think that we are pretty good at listening, especially if we don't have any physical hearing issues. But in our conversation, we talked about how hearing is only half of the equation. The rest of listening is hard work and is actually a skill that we can hone in order to build deeper understanding, trust, and relationships with those around us. We also talked about how social media can hinder us when it comes to really listening to and understanding people. So join us as we discuss these things and more with Dan on the Disciple Makers podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I'm Caleb Olszewski, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Evans.
Hi.
Today, we are joined by Dan Miller. Dan and his wife, Becky, serve in our headquarters with Disciple Makers, and they are passionate about counseling and listening and getting to the heart with people. And today, we're talking in particular about listening, but welcome to the podcast, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So as we jump into this topic of listening, I think it's always helpful, and we do this on just about every podcast, to just start with a basic definition and particularly a biblical definition of what is listening. So do you have some thoughts on that, Dan?
I do. I will do a little bit of preamble before I actually give you the concise answer. All right. I think most of us would certainly say that listening and hearing are different, that you can hear something but not understand it. It might get in your ears, but it might not actually make sense to you. One of the things that that might be really surprising is that Jesus was the one who really made that distinction in the Bible. In his examples, in his many parables, he would tell stories, and these stories were aimed at a deeper truth and provoke the listener to think and ponder and understand. And at the end of those parables, he would often say this phrase, him who has ears to hear, let him hear. Or I'll say that again, he who has ears to hear, let them hear. And the implication is that there's more to listening than just hearing. You can actually sit there on the mountainside and hear what he's saying and not get it. And of course, that was the case in many, many instances. And from that, there's a general principle. For people who would hear and understand, they're literally doing what God is making their ears to do. And in this case, it's hear the voice of his son, Jesus.
So Dan, would it be fair to say, and I don't know what the Hebrew word for listening is, it'd actually be interesting to look it up, that there's almost an active part of listening, that Jesus is, as he's telling you this parable, there's an action of not only hearing it, but then internalizing, doing something, that listening is active and hearing is passive. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, even the working definition I would aim at based on what we just talked about is listening is hearing, but it's with the intent to understand. And I want to use the word intent because there were often people who would hear Jesus's parables, and they would kind of get it, and they'd move toward him, and you know they'd get it wrong, or they'd be off by a little bit. But he would work with those people. You know, he would often explain further. And in the same way, if I'm talking to somebody, I might not fully understand them, but if I'm really listening, I'm trying very hard to. There's an active part of that, and so I think there's grace involved. Now that sounds like the secular definition. That might sound almost the exact same as if you were to look it up in a dictionary, but I do think there is one added component, and perhaps we'll talk about it a bit later, and that's what motivates us to do it. It's not simply the gathering of information, but if we want to understand somebody, it's because, and I think here's where Christianity separates itself, and Jesus certainly does, there's a factor of love involved. And a desire for the other person's good above my own. And in that, I think we find a real, perhaps an energizing value to help us actually listen, which I think is unique to Christianity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really helpful that we're
kind of separating out the physical sense of hearing, and then there's actually maybe a skill involved to listening then.
Right. I think any of us that have kids or remember what it was like to be a kid, it's possible for us to be in the same room as our parent who has asked us to pick up our toys, but we were watching a show or we were playing with those toys, and we just did not understand what they were saying. It's not that we didn't hear, it's just we were fixated on whatever we were doing or whatever we thought was important.
Yeah. Maybe let's start then even backing up, because I know this topic is something that you and your wife, Becky, are passionate about and perhaps even known for. So how did you and your wife get interested in this topic of listening well?
Yeah, well, I'll introduce my wife's experience with it first. She has an undergraduate and a graduate degree in counseling. Part of the reason she actually got into that, though, and she told me this, is that she kind of liked the idea of giving advice to people. And she quickly discovered that actually it's a lot more about good listening than good talking when it comes to counseling. She also loved the desire then to be challenged by the idea of building a skill. So once she was met with that challenge, I think she got really excited once the Lord sort of corrected her vision. It's certainly more than grabbing a few sound bites from a podcast and then running off and thinking you're an expert. So it took years and years of practice. I became interested in this area because when my wife and I got married, I realized that I was a terrible listener. How it played out was a little bit stereotypically. I would often not maintain eye contact when she was talking to me. And then later on, I would realize that I did not actually understand what she was asking me to do. Sometimes I would make pretty quick assumptions. So I would be looking at her, but she would say something, and the language would go into my ears and to my brain, but I would interpret it a certain way without clarifying. And so we found that we were using different vocabulary, and I was totally thinking she wanted one thing and she wanted another. So I just wasn't slowing down and giving it the attention when I was trying to do it. So I very quickly realized this would be a good way to improve my marriage. So that's something that we both started working on together. And together we've liked the topic, especially as we've been on staff with Disciple Makers, because we like watching the trends of communication among students. For example, we've been on staff for about 10 years, and we've noticed that for the most part, students have less and less become interested in the idea of a phone call or even an in-person call. It's become more like, of course you let it go to voicemail and you should text me if you want to call me and all that. Or they live on social media. And of course, all that is going to make it very hard to be a good listener because you're missing all the nuances that come with an in-person meeting. But not only that, one of the things that has made it more complicated is now that we're in a time of more social distancing and less time in person, phone calls are kind of coming back and Zoom calls are kind of back in style. But I think people are launching back into them and they've forgotten to blow the dust off of their skills. And so I've just heard story after story of people, students and younger staff, having these kind of train wreck moments where they're trying to talk to somebody over the phone, but they just keep missing each other. And they just keep not understanding either the person or what the real problem is. So all of that's got us very excited to say, oh, what can we do to help?
Yeah, that's really helpful, Dan. And I wonder if we could maybe kind of start there in terms of talking about why is listening so hard? What is it about listening that makes it easy for us to miss each other?
Well, I think there's two main reasons that listening is very hard. One is that other people make it very hard. And I don't mean that to say that they do that on purpose. One of my favorite verses, in fact, Becky and I led a number of fall conference breakout sessions on this subject. And the verse that we kept going back to was Proverbs chapter 20, verse 5, which says, "The heart of a person is like deep water, and it takes a person of understanding to draw them out." So people are complex, is what that's saying. And so you have to be very understanding to draw out those people. It's nothing they've necessarily done wrong. And I think if we look at people and we look at the fact that people grow up with very different social lives, they grow up with one parent, two parents, no parents, that's going to change how they view how conflict happens. That's going to how they were treated as kids by those parents or in school, even the language that they spoke or the vocabulary that they picked up based on what part of the world they grew up in is going to change how they interact with this person from State College or this person from Eastern Pennsylvania or something like that. And so people are complex just simply based on their upbringing. And all of that means that we can have a conversation and think we're speaking the same language, but we're not. And especially with the internet or using social media, you're talking with somebody with a different vocabulary and you don't even know it because you don't know where they're from. Beyond that, some of those aspects of their upbringing, they might have undergone trauma, which means they view deep conversations very differently. Some people might have been trained through hard experience to avoid deep conversations, or they might have, those deep conversations might have been used as a weapon against them. So they're not really interested and they're going to maybe try to avoid it. Some people just really love conflicted deep conversations and they really appreciate going in. And in fact, if you're not doing that, you're not authentic. So they almost try to hold people by the ankles and shake them upside down and say, we should have deep conversations because isn't that what you're supposed to do? And they don't take the time to build trust. So in short, and this is even amongst Christians, maybe the person I'm talking to might love Jesus, and maybe I love Jesus, but that might really actually be the only thing we have in common. And if that's the case, that's enough to have a deep conversation, but you know, buckle up, it's going to be it's going to take a while to get there.
Hmm. So would I be correct in saying that listening is actually a lot of work? We obviously already have talked about that it's more than just the sense of hearing. But it sounds like from what you're sharing that a lot of what it takes to truly understand someone is a lot of context from their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably going to take a lot longer than most of us understand, especially if we're not doing it in person.
And I think, you know, even something the three of us were talking about before we started recording, this complexity applies to ourselves as well. You know, that we come to the table with our own filters and experiences, and that plays a factor as well, right, Dan?
Oh, sure. I mean, in our case, not only are we complex, but we're often going to be confused. We may not be motivated by the love that Jesus had for people. Now, part of it is just because, really, we ourselves, by nature, don't aim for the heart. One verse that comes to mind is 1 Samuel 16:7. Man looks on outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And when you think about that, and when you consider it as you're talking to somebody, it means that your default setting is you're going to look at their outward appearance. You're not going to be able to tell all the inner workings, especially not without any hard work. And you're just going to make those snap judgments. You're going to look at their Facebook profile photo, or you're going to look at their picture on Instagram and you're going to automatically say, they got nothing to say. I don't like how they look. Or they might use a certain language and you just might not decide to take them seriously. You know, if you were raised in a home where you were always pressured or bullied into being a hard worker and not slowing down and analyzing your feelings, you might look at somebody who's very introspective as kind of like soft, or I wish you'd just kind of get over it. And we just make these horrible generalizations all the time because we often can't see the heart, and it's just so much easier to make a quick judgment, especially when social media says, answer quickly, because something else is about to start trending. I'd like to take a moment and compare good listening to inductive Bible study, or OIA Bible study. You may have heard that named here on the podcast, or observing and interpreting and applying. In a lot of ways, the skills of good listening are very much like good Bible study. except instead of studying God's word, we're studying people. For that reason, there are some differences, of course. You know, the person I'm talking to is not infallible, for one thing. Beyond that, they might just simply not know what the problem is. You know, the Bible is clear, though it takes some work to understand, but people really might not know their own hearts. And even beyond that, when we study the Bible, it changes us. We don't change it. That's the mark of, that's what inductive Bible study is. But when we study other people and when we understand other people, especially if we're resolving a conflict, in good listening, both parties might be required to make a change. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't do that with the Bible. So there's a lot of ways in which it's kind of, you know, it's unlike OIA Bible study, but maybe a way or two in which it very much is like OIA Bible study is the order. I want to observe a person at great length before I start to make an interpretation. If I read a Bible verse or a Bible chapter once, quickly, while I'm at a red light, and you ask me to interpret it, I'm probably going to do a bad job. And in the same way, if I try to listen to a person very quickly and I make an interpretation, it's probably going to be wrong. So it's just going to take a lot of work, and it certainly has to do with the order. I don't want to start with interpreting the person and then try to make observations.
So talk a little bit to us about social media and how that has kind of weakened our observation mechanism. Because I feel like if I'm thinking about social media, I read even a whole article, I'm missing out on a lot of those context clues about this person, where they're coming from, where they're writing from. How do we think about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, we should probably back up for a minute and look at how social media is designed. So as I said earlier, it's already set up to basically provoke you to talk. So you're leading by saying something. And I think, as many of us know, if you lead with something that's very much closed-ended, like, or it's kind of uses a lot of insider language, like a meme or something like that, it's not really inviting dialogue. So it's almost like you're saying something, but then if somebody asks you to explain more or makes a criticism of it, all of a sudden you're trying to resolve a conflict at the same time while you're trying to get to know a person. Think about how hard that is to do. Mm-hmm. In good listening or in good relational building, which social media puts us at a disadvantage because we can know people instantly without even actually meeting them. We can actually, instead of getting to know them, understanding where they come from, understanding their upbringing, understanding their vocabulary, understanding their socioeconomic status, all these things that are going to affect why they're saying what they're saying, instead of doing that and understanding the person, we've led getting to know them by being thrown into the middle of a conflict. Somebody makes some harsh statement about how they feel about, you know, abortion or Black Lives Matter or anything like that. And we hear them come in with a combative statement, or we ourselves make a combative statement, like a very firm statement. And before you know it, there's just five or six people in the conversation, and everybody's angry, or just posting YouTube links without context, or memes, and nobody's asking questions, and nobody knows anyone. It's a wonder that it goes as well as it does. I think.
Yeah. Well, and even what you're saying, that social media, that some of our context of communication now, it really does push you to lead with speaking. And that's just very inverted from the scripture. You know, think of James 1:19. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. That there's just this total inversion of what you're talking about. And that doesn't mean that social media is all bad or evil, but that there is this way that it does not set us up well to listen. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more later in the practical.
Yeah, maybe I can make a summative statement that sort of concludes that thought. So listening is hard because of other people and because of us. You know, they're complicated, we're complicated. They're confused, maybe we're confused. That's actually why so often in scripture, verses like Proverbs chapter 20, verse 5 are actually an instruction. And James 1:19 is an instruction. It assumes that we're not necessarily coming at this correctly. Two other proverbs that come to mind that I think really give me a lot to think about when it comes to why listening is so hard. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 2, a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. So what makes it hard is that if I'm being foolish about it, and then somebody is a fool towards me, well, then of course it's not going to get better. And then Proverbs chapter 18, verse 13, if one gives an answer before he hears, it's his folly and shame. But since we're on social media, especially so much, and we've been trained to sort of counterpunch, you know, man, I got a meme that's going to knock his socks off here. And some guy takes a shot at me. And instead of simply saying, you know, I was wrong, would you forgive me? Have you ever posted that on social media? I remember once somebody had made a combative post. And instead of stopping and praying, I kind of counterpunched it. And I, you know, it wasn't the wisest thing. And thankfully, the Lord convicted me even in that thread to stop and say, I wasn't listening. Would you forgive me for that? And boy, that changed the entire conversation. We started to have a real conversation because of that, because the Lord helped me to realize, wow, I was really being a fool. I was being shameful by not drawing that person out. It wasn't just that they made me mad. I was being a fool.
Yeah. And so we've titled this episode Confessions of a Terrible Listener. And I think it's an opportunity for us all to admit we are all pretty terrible listeners. And we've kind of been that way since the beginning. It's all over mm-hmm. scripture. It is the assumption. Yeah. And yet Jesus, as the author and perfecter and founder of our faith, you know, we look to him as an example and as he's making us into his image. So how did Jesus listen well?
Well, for one thing, he knew people's hearts. You know, that's one advantage of being a member of the Trinity that we kind of don't have. He doesn't need to do OIA. He didn't even need to draw people out. I mean, that's wild when you think about all the conversations he had where you're just like, why did he even have that conversation? He didn't need to. But he did it for their benefit and obviously for our benefit. You might say that, you know, in keeping with our chapters like Philippians 2, that he came to serve and he came to love and he came to walk with people so that they could see their need. And then he would say, I am the meeting of that need. Two examples from the book of John that I really like. One is Nicodemus. You know, he comes to Jesus by night and he's asking question after question. And it's pretty clear that he doesn't understand who Jesus is. So he doesn't get it. Jesus is speaking plainly. Well, he's being a bit cryptic, but point is Nicodemus doesn't get it. And it looks kind of like an information problem. Like, oh, maybe you need to say it this way or that way, Jesus. But Jesus actually kind of gets to the heart. He says, are you the teacher of Israel? And yet you don't understand these things. And so Jesus has actually gotten to the real need in the conversation. Nicodemus doesn't know who Jesus is. He has a heart problem that's much deeper than informational. And Jesus, for whatever reason, chooses to kind of let the conversation drop there. Or, you know, it might go on a little bit, but it obviously doesn't have a resolution. But later on in the book, you realize that Nicodemus does get it. He does understand who Jesus is. And it took a little while. And for whatever reason, that was kind of a long haul conversation there. It took a little while. And Jesus kind of let that happen. But in love, he knew that that's what Nicodemus needed. He needed to be confronted with that reality. The second example is in John chapter 4 with the Samaritan woman. And Samaritans were, of course, outsiders. And this woman was even an outsider in the Samaritan culture. So she was like an outcast of outcasts. So here's somebody that, you know, why would Jesus bother? But yet he does. And he asks her question after question, and he even gets kind of personal, asking about her married life and all that. But he does that because he provokes her. Then in verse 25, she says, I know that Messiah will come, and he will explain everything. she kind of gets to what her real need is, or even what her real hope is. And Jesus then, in that scenario, decides to give her the answer, I who speak to you am he. And you're probably thinking, well, why didn't he just say that to Nicodemus? But for whatever reason, in one case, one needed to stew a bit and the other person just got the answer. But in both conversations, Jesus's aim was revealing their need, and then in varying degrees, he then showed them that he was the answer to that need. He preached the gospel to them.
Yeah, and I love what you're pointing out, Dan, that he gets to the heart and he gets to the person, and he wants to save the person. He wants them to have, you know, because in both of their situations, their deepest need is their sin, but they're so different. And he doesn't have arguments in the way that he could have. I think often in our current context, we look for people's stances on issues first rather than the person behind them. And so he probably could have had some sort of theological argument with Nicodemus or with the woman. She actually does try to bring in sort of like a common hot topic conflict of the day, where she mentions to him in 19, when he starts to make it personal toward the heart, she tries to turn it into a political argument. In 19, she says, our fathers, the Samaritans, worship on this mountain, but you, a Jew, say that we should worship in Jerusalem. And Jesus like does not take the bait. He's like, nope, I see you as a person. I care about who you are. I'm going to preach the gospel to you, and I'm going to meet you where you're at. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah, it's almost like she's dropping a meme in the middle of the thread, but he just does a little judo and flips it and gets to the heart anyway.
Yeah, he's listening to the person and seeing the heart. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, and I think we see through those two examples that you guys are talking about, really the motivation behind why Jesus would listen to these people in the first place, why he would interact with them. You see through the kinds of questions that he asks, his motivation is actually to bring them life. And I think we also see here something that's really key is that he uses good listening and asking good questions to provoke something that, you know, he can get an answer from them as some way to actually help them to realize their own need and their own heart.
Yeah, you might say, of course, his motivation wasn't to simply win arguments, but to, in love, win people.
Yeah.
And because of that, whereas most people might think of Jesus as this, you know, as God saying, well, you know, I'll show them. It's actually Jesus coming down humbly and saying, I'll show them. He's using the same words. He's just, his motivation is so much different than I think we can tend to assume.
Yeah, that's amazing. And we could talk more about examples, but I think those are two really great examples, two very different people. So we've spent some time looking at Jesus, and what's at stake when we don't listen well?
A few pretty important things. Number one is knowing the other person. You know, if I'm just getting to know you, and I'm thinking we understand each other, or I'm thinking I understand you as a person, but I don't, we can go our whole life thinking we have a real relationship and we actually don't. I've even seen sometimes married couples in which they're both kind of conflict avoiders. They don't know how to ask the right questions, or they might even boast and say, you know, we never have fights. And I'm thinking, do you actually know this person? Like, have you actually gotten beneath the veneer of how are you? I'm fine, you know, but maybe pushed beyond that and said, you know, are you actually fine? I'm not certain that might be the case.
Yeah, I think an example I often think about is our parents. I think it's easy for many of us, and especially I can think back to myself in college. My parents were probably the easiest person for me to get into conflict with. Where they want me to do one thing, I want to do another. And I, at one point in college, my campus minister pointed out to me that I may have lived my whole life with my parents, and you know, they've always been there for literally as long as I've been alive. But there's a lot of things about them that I didn't actually know. Like, I didn't really know their upbringing, their background, their struggles, their hurts, like even all the things that they were processing through as parents as they were raising me. And so I find that the timing and age of being in college and becoming an adult as an incredible time to start to ask those questions of my parents. And I found that as I did that, I came to a profound, deep understanding of why they did what they did and why they make the decisions that they do and why they value the things that they do.
Yeah, that's a great example. Another thought I have when I think about what's at stake, and I think this might have been something that your wife Becky said to me. This sounds like a Becky saying, but it was something along the lines of not listening well can really impede your speaking later. That if you're not listening well, you may lose a chance to share the gospel. Mm-hmm. Or, and obviously the Lord is sovereign. He calls people to him however he wants. And honestly, sometimes it's in spite of us. But I think you see in John 3 and 4, in all of Paul's letters, that it strikes me as so interesting in each of the letters to the churches. It's the same gospel, but each church is different and each church is struggling with a different thing. And Paul doesn't know that unless he's really listening. And so I do think that, you know, when we're at, if we're on campus and we're thinking about evangelism, we're thinking about reaching out to people. Yes, absolutely. We do need to be speaking the gospel. But you see that Jesus does this in a life on life, walking alongside sort of way. And so if when we don't listen well, that actually may hurt us down the road when it becomes time to speak the gospel.
Yeah, that's definitely a long game implication. I think that's absolutely huge that our trust can really be eroded with people over time. And in fact, it could very well be that, and I don't say this to maybe cause anybody listening to this to freak out, but it could be that you think people trust you a lot more than they actually do. You might think they do, but it could be that you've been building almost an account with them, a deficit with them. Another thing at stake is actually knowing what the problem is if you're in conflict. You might think that the issue is this thing over here, but it's actually another thing entirely. And so you might rush to prescribe the gospel truth, and you might say something that's biblically true, but it's just not appropriate for the situation. And one of the effects of that is what you just said, Sarah. Over time, they're probably going to stop asking you for advice, and you might actually be surprised as to why that is. So in short, what's at stake? Knowing people, knowing what the problems are with people, and the long-term trust of people. There's a lot at stake if we're not doing this correctly.
So with our remaining time, let's just get really practical. We've all admitted we're not super great at this. Could be a lot of room for improvement. What does this look like practically? What are some real things that we can do and put into practice to listen better?
Well, I'll break it down into two categories, and we'll probably spend a while on each. And just to give you a preview, the two categories are handle the facts and then handle the feelings. So you might think of the facts as the actual content of a book or a story. And then the feelings are sort of like the form, the way in which those things are delivered. And so we have to be aware of both of those things, especially when it comes to the different nuances of how we can be in conversation with people, be it in person or on social media or whatnot. So first, maybe handle the facts. Our goal, like your goal in actually practically caring for people, if what we just said is true, is to understand their story rather than aiming to tell your story. So you're really making the conversation 100% about knowing them, which when you get used to that, that's actually very freeing to realize that you don't have to just wait until they decide to take half a breath and then butt in with whatever you thought sounded good at the time. You're actually slowing down, asking them questions. If you're getting to know someone, the reason why we should really focus on them is we need to filter out the stories we're telling ourselves about people. For example, if you're getting to know somebody, you may have already begun to categorize them based on what you've seen, you know, looking at their outward appearance, or what you've heard about them. Oh yeah, he's just late. Yeah, I don't know, but you know, and then you already start to, you know, this guy's not dependable, and you already automatically start to put them in a box, and it's almost like you've cut off the idea of growth. Then in solving a conflict, a way that you can filter out your story is you might be tempted to paint them as a villain and yourself as the victim. Just have to be real careful about stuff like that. So you might be coming in with all these stories about the other person, and you got to filter that stuff out.
Totally. And I think social media, to kind of loop back, plays a significant role in the stories that we might tell about people before we even meet them. I think of Facebook in particular, like it kind of encourages even categorizing yourself, like I am a Christian, I'm interested in women, yeah, or whatever. Like it's like putting people in all these different categories, and these social media engines, like they really are just feeding off of that and feeding us more content around the categories that we fall into and all this kind of stuff. And I love what you're saying, that it's really helpful to actually, let's just throw all that out in the window and actually get to know the person, actually ask those questions, and that it can be really harmful if we try to start making assumptions, even of things that we've seen them post on social media or whatever.
And something I'm learning to do, that I have done this in person more, but I'm learning to even do it on social media, is to acknowledge that I don't know why someone has said something or shared something. And to start realizing, if I have a thought, well, they did this because, and then I start, you'll handle the facts. Did they actually say that to me? No. Does that actually mean that that's why they're doing that? Maybe. Probably not. Yeah. And an example recently, Facebook friend of mine shared something, and it's the dangerous example where I know this person just enough to think I know who they are, but not enough to really know them. Yeah. And so they shared something, and there wasn't a ton of context, and I just got mad, and I sent a private message, and I was like, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this? These are the three reasons why I think this is a bad idea." And then they replied and was. And said, that's not what I meant by that. This is why. And I just looked so stupid in that moment. And I just had to apologize and say, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I do think a better question could have been to start that dialogue, to send the private message, hey, can you explain what you meant by that? I think that would have opened a dialogue rather than coming in guns blazing, which is what I did. And that was stupid. And then I looked foolish.
Yeah, maybe even to connect it back to the OIA Bible study from earlier. In Bible study lingo, what we're talking about is presuppositions. So basically what I'm doing is I'm watching out for my tendency to think I know exactly what the person is saying. Think about the kids' Bible stories that you read growing up, and then you read them in the actual Bible, and you realize, wow, when I actually look at all of the book of John, this parable does not mean what I thought it meant. Mm-hmm. That same is true of people. If you actually back up and you check yourself and you realize you might not know the person very well, you might actually realize you're doing more damage than they are.
Yeah, so I think that's just helpful to realize the stories, especially the victim and villain stories. I remember learning that in college, and that was very helpful. It was just eye-opening to look at, man, I see the world as everybody is a bad guy, and they're out for me. And that just wasn't true. And I think another scripture that's helpful in handling the facts, and maybe even then we can transition to handling the feelings, because I think it's in this passage too, is actually Philippians 4, 2 through 9, is all in this context of a disagreement and a conflict that's happening. And we don't know what the conflict is, but clearly it's big enough that it's gotten the attention of the whole church. And some of the commands as these people are charged to work through this conflict is, let your reasonableness be known. Don't be anxious. Finally, whatever's true, whatever's honorable, whatever's just, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And that's a very helpful, that's a scriptural word for handle the facts, handle the feelings. So it's assuming that there's going to be something there that's true. There's going to be something there that's commendable. Even if it's small, find that thing and then start to work from there. And so separate out, what do you actually know is true? What is your interpretation? And then maybe we could talk about, what are the feelings?
Yeah, I wonder if you did mention the word anxiety, which I thought was a pretty helpful thing. I wonder if even the fact that you're engaging in a social media platform where the whole world is watching, or maybe you don't know how the algorithms work. You don't know who's watching, but it's more than just you and them. They say something and you feel this, I have to respond. The fate of the world depends on what I say next. And no, not really. And because of that, then that anxiety might be provoking, which is maybe a question that, you know, if that's something that you do, you could, you know, that person could then ask themselves. I mean, in all things, maybe even to give people a script on, yeah, but what do I actually say when I'm talking to them? There's a phrase that Becky and I almost beat to death in our house, and it sounds like you're saying this. Is that right? Which, especially if there's emotions involved, might almost seem comical. Like if somebody's looks really angry and they're saying angry things, saying, you know, you look angry, is that correct? Or from my perspective, you look angry, but you'd be surprised how often even that isn't true. Like my wife or myself, sometimes when we're talking, we might look angry, but really we're scared, or we're just thinking really hard about those words because it's late at night and we're exhausted. But that might not even be true. So you just keep asking that and you might be surprised at what you find. Should we talk about handling the feelings?
Yeah,
let's do it.
Let's get juicy, especially in conflict. I'll even, as a preamble, this might be where it might be really important to meet in person, or to just don't have this conversation over text. You know, be real careful about this. First, consider their feelings. Notice their verbal and nonverbal cues. That sounds a little clinical. Some of this is from my wife, Becky. Here's an example of a verbal cue. They keep saying words that indicate frustration, like, he always does this, or I never do this. They're using language that might provoke anger or might appear to be angry. So you're looking for those verbal cues or even those repeated words. Frustrated, mad, angry, scared, terrified, whatever. And then there's nonverbal cues. And this is everything that they're saying without using words. Example, maybe somebody says they're fine, but their eyes betray them. You know, they're saying they're fine, but they're really looking off into the distance, or they're kind of frequently just... I'm fine. You know, they're just kind of sighing a lot. Or even just like they're tensing up a little bit as they're saying it. And you might even want to poke in at that point. And you might just want to say, hey, you know, you said that, but I couldn't help but notice that you appeared to look maybe a little bit angry. Is that true? You know, is there any truth there? And that might be a little... You might want to build up some trust with the person before you go in like that, because you're really almost trying to look through to the heart, and it might be a little scary for people. But oftentimes, people will say fine, but sometimes people actually use those nonverbal cues as breadcrumbs because they really do want to be drawn out. They just don't know how to ask for help. And if you know how to look for those cues, you can really go in and do some good work. So that's something you can do towards other people. Maybe I could share a few things that you could do to handle your own feelings when you're relating to people. Notice your own verbal and nonverbal cues. For example, I had no idea, but apparently when I talk to people, I don't smile very much. And that stunned me when people would occasionally tell me that. They'd say, Dan, I wish you would emote more in conversation. And I'm thinking, I'm emoting as hard as I can. Or, well, I feel happy, but I'm just forgetting to smile. Sometimes it's just I'm not thinking about the other person and I'm not thinking how I'm coming across. Or your other verbal and nonverbal cues might be, you know, you might be hesitating to maintain an appropriate amount of eye contact. You're really self-conscious, so you're staring a hole in them, or you're looking away and checking your phone and you're not realizing, wow, that other person might look at you doing that and say, well, they don't care what I have to say. I'm not going to share anything with them. Or maybe your tone of voice, you know, be record yourself speaking. That's a scary thought. And listen to how you sound. And
yeah. But that's so practical, Dan, because I The few attempts I made at discipleship when I was in college were honestly not great. And then the Lord, in his, I don't know, sense of humor, brought me to Disciple Maker staff. And one of the things I really had to learn in my discipleship was not so much that I wasn't listening, but my nonverbal cues were just not good. Apparently, I stare, I don't blink, and I have a monotone voice. And so I just was not doing well my first year or two on staff. And finally, some of the students were gracious and brave enough to say, like, Sarah, we tell you hard things and you just stare at us and you don't say anything for like 30 seconds and it feels like we're going to die. And I didn't realize, I live my life inside my head. Like, I'm always thinking, but I legitimately forget that other people don't hear my thoughts. And so I was like, wow, I am terrible at discipleship. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because I haven't been trained well. It's more because my listening is terrifying people, and that is not helpful.
Yeah. And I think we see in this area, like so many others we've talked about on the podcast over the past couple months, is that intentionality with everything in our lives is so key, especially when we're seeking to grow in our faith to look more like Christ. And that going into any situation or doing pretty much anything in our life on autopilot opens us up to not do it well. And so I think this is so helpful that we're talking about this, because I think often we might say, you know what, I don't do eye contact with people or whatever, and that's just the way I am, and people just have to deal with it. And to a certain extent, that's true. You know, the Lord may have made you in a given way, but I think we can also recognize that as we're seeking to leverage things like listening to actually help other people and care for other people, it would actually make sense for us to maybe change some things about ourselves to actually care for them more or better. Yeah. And I think that's really a key thing that we're drawing out here too.
Well, and it's so in line with, we're being conformed to the image of Jesus. And so we're going to change. And if we're sitting on our heels, and I don't know if I would say this is true all the time, but I found, at least for me, if I start to think, well, this is just the way I am, sometimes that's not helpful. and to realize Paul saying that he becomes all things to all people in order to save some, that do I work on my body language because I want people to like me? I mean, sure, I like when people like me, but primarily I work on it because I want to have an opportunity to speak life. I want to have an opportunity to share that. And if I am a terrible listener, it's going to be really hard to get there. And so I do it out of love, considering others' interests.
One caveat, perhaps I should have even said more at the outset of all this, that I think you were alluding to as we're doing all this, is that the purpose of everything that we're talking about today is not how to work through difficult conversations with people or conflicts or anything like that. It's how to put yourself in a position to have those conversations. So in other words, we're not touching on application. It's observation. We're interpreting stuff. And that gets us to a point where we can now begin to go in with appropriate passages of scripture, and we can make appropriate changes to each party to begin to resolve conflict. And so I say all that to say this: we can do everything a person listening could take every bit of advice and do it perfectly, and maybe they never quite get to that conversation because the other person just isn't ready. That's okay. That's not your responsibility. All we're talking about here today is how do we make it the most possible or the most probable that you will be in a position to have those deep conversations.
And I think these skills also just prepare us well for daily friendship, just understanding each other and knowing people deeply as well.
Now that we've done all that, we've done the observing, you're not staring a hole in them, you know, you're maintaining appropriate eye contact, you're watching your tone of voice, you're asking lots of good questions to get to the facts and clarify with them. What do you do then? How do you then actually get yourself where you can have a really deep gospel-centered conversation? The last thing you do, and I'll take us right back to Proverbs chapter 20, verse 5, is you draw them out. Here's what I mean by that. you reflect all the things their feelings are telling you rather than react to those feelings. This is very hard if you don't like angry people or sad people, or if somebody's voice raises or they get mad, you just want to run out of the room. It'll be kind of hard for you, and it's going to take you a while to get past this one. So let's go back to maybe a seemingly angry person. And you say, I noticed that this and this and this. Are you angry? Yeah, I noticed that you seem angry. Is that true? And maybe it's painfully obvious, or maybe not. But when you do that, you're moving towards them very carefully. You're not saying something like, well, you're angry, and the Bible says that you shouldn't be angry. What a train wreck of a scenario you're getting ready to to get into. But rather, you're reacting. You're moving towards interpretation very carefully, almost like with a surgeon's scalpel. I'll give an example from my marriage with Becky that I think is maybe a good example of how not to do this, but then how the Lord helped us to make some corrections. Here's a scenario that happened quite often in the first few years of our marriage. And even I think last week it happened once. Becky's not sure how to solve a problem, or she's indecisive. There's all these options in front of her and she doesn't know what to pick. And so she looks puzzled and I swoop in, and how my brain is working is I think Becky must need the right options. That's her problem. Of course, I'm a guy, and I don't want to be stereotypical there, but I tend to want to solve the problem very quickly or suggest a way out. And so I will say things like, well, have you tried this? Well, how about this thing over here? Here's this other thing. But then I noticed that she was not helped. In some cases, she would literally start crying. And my helping actually made it worse, and I didn't know why. And so maybe I'll actually put you two on the spot. So my wife looks overwhelmed. Let's go back to before I said the wrong thing. What do you think I could have done differently?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is maybe saying, hey, it seems like you're feeling overwhelmed. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah. Sarah, do you want to wait? He got it right, but you want to say anything? Or?
Yeah. I often ask people, what are they thinking or feeling? Because sometimes they're not sure what their feeling is at first, but they have thoughts. And so start with the thoughts, or vice versa. And so I try to ask both, because sometimes you'll ask somebody, how are you feeling? And I'm one of these people. I'll just stare at you and be like, well, I wasn't angry, but now I am. but so yeah, starting with more of the thoughts and the feelings, the whys behind the whats.
Yeah, well, thankfully, Caleb, you gave the very good answer of you look overwhelmed. Is that right? Well, thankfully, the following time I did do that, and she told me what the actual problem was. She said, well, I feel like it's all on me to pick correctly. That's what her problem was. She didn't need more options. She felt crushed by the options, and she felt like if she didn't pick the right one, she was going to be a failure. I mean, do you see now in that instance how Becky and I are ready to have an actual conversation? I've built the trust. She's said what the problem is. We don't always get that luxury. But, you know, over time, as we build trust, you know, people know themselves more and they'll actually be able to be aware of that. And man, I mean, the connection to the gospel is so clear from there. You know, we can look together and say like, yeah, it's actually not up to you to pick correctly. It's up to you to just simply make a decision in faith and learn from that, and to realize that Christ, even if you make a mistake and you didn't do it high-handed, you know, it's not a problem. Even if you did do it high-handed, there's grace for that. And the Lord is patient and slow to anger. Man, what a conversation we can have based on that trust built.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to that proverb, right, of the person of understanding can draw that out. And I think one of the key things there is that truly understanding people is one of the biggest door openers and ways into those kind of conversations. And having someone feel understood is one of the most incredible ways to build trust with people as well. And so I think as we see that when people truly feel listened to and feel understood, not only does that open up the possibility for a dialogue and instead of shut it down, but it actually opens the door to greater and deeper trust where they would be willing to share in that dialogue about what the actual problem maybe really is.
Yeah, like the worst case scenario if you do this stuff is you build trust with people. That's the worst thing that can happen. Of course, you're going to make some errors and all that, but even the humility you express when you get it wrong will build trust. And the best case scenario is you'll know people more deeply and you'll actually begin to understand what the problem is and you'll begin to apply the gospel more correctly.
Totally. Well, thanks so much for coming today and talking about this stuff, Dan. I feel like we could probably go on for another 2 hours just talking about all the implications of this. But I hope for you guys listening at home that this has just been really helpful for you to consider what it could look like to intentionally listen to people with a desire to seek to care for them and to know them, to build trust, and to truly deeply understand their heart. We'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Disciple Makers podcast. We hope that through this conversation, you've gained a better understanding of how important listening is and have some practical biblical steps for how to pursue listening well. As always, we have resources in the show notes for further learning on this topic, so please check those out if you're interested. We mentioned Bible study and the OIA method a bunch in this week's episode. Next week, we'll be talking more about OIA and Bible study specifically, as we are joined by Disciple Makers President Peter Kroll for that topic. So definitely join us for that. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next week on the Disciple Makers podcast.